Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode number 111 of the Peak of Serenity podcast. I am, as always, one of your hosts, Emilson. And in Anomaly's seat this week, we have former host, current guest, Babylonius.
Hello, everybody.
And Anomaly has some real life stuff going on. He just had a kid, so he's very busy right now. So today we have Babylonius on the show for two reasons. One, so that I'm not talking to myself. And two, well, maybe I'm still talking to myself. But two, we don't talk about Windwalkers very much on this show. It's really neither me nor Anomaly play it. It's not really on our radar that much.
Yeah.
So we're going to catch up a little bit on what it is like being a Windwalker right now, which actually I think, Babylonius, what are you doing in Raid right now?
Well, right now, the past 2 weeks, I've been a Boomkin. Because I have been, I was playing Feral for most of Prague, but with our completely hilarious disaster of attendance cycling the past couple weeks on Anduin, I've been filling in as a Boomkin, which has been a very interesting situation.
Yeah, so you're not also not playing Windwalker right now.
Nope. No, I gave up on Windwalker for this tier. I really don't like the way that Windwalker is good at things. Or I don't like what Windwalker is good at, I should say.
You don't like being good at exactly one thing and then not having it show up on any end boss?
Yes. I don't. Yeah. I think I wrote, you know, anybody who's listening can read, you know, I put a big article on Peak about it, about how I felt that Windwalker is a toxic spec. I believe is the clickbaity title. yes, it is. Yeah, so I mean, really just Windwalker is very, very good at AoEing. It is a lot of fun to AoE for those that enjoy it. I just don't do a lot of Mythic Plus. So when it comes to that sort of thing in raids, I just really am not a huge fan of, you know, my strength really relying on other people's weakness. You know, the better I do, the worse they do. The worse they do, the better I do. And kind of, I felt like doing Soul Render specifically.
Yeah, that was a frustrating one.
I was really, yeah, hoping for people to not play their classes well.
You were hoping for them to do all of the single target damage and let you do all the AoE, right?
Right, which we did on Prague, you know, which was fine for Prague, but
them farm Prague comes.
I mean, my Prague parse was my highest DPS for the rest of farm.
Yeah.
You know, so that is really, you know, I just didn't like that. I didn't like how that felt. So I figured I would give Feral Druid a try. You know, just being that it really focuses pretty much entirely on single target. And that's kind of, I felt something that I couldn't quite step on other people's toes and other people couldn't step on mine. So
yeah.
Windwalker is shelved, with the full intention of going back to it in farm and or Dragonflight.
I keep in my head thinking that the title of the, and this is probably just me being kind of out of it today, but I keep thinking that the title of the next expansion is Shadowlands, and that's
not true.
I
guess if you're into that sort of thing.
No, Shadowlands Classic can stay in the future.
Have to go back.
So we're going to talk more about Windwalker, but I also want to mention later in the show, we are also going to talk about the loot stuff that they announced for season 4. So we've got some deterministic loot, the much requested vendors. They will have lots of things on them, but we'll get more into that later. But I guess, so for this tier, like this tier, the way it's set up, what fights would Windwalker actually be really good at?
So Windwalker is, you know, kind of looking at all of, you know, let me pull up a list of the fights just so I don't
Because it's like a 1 minute burst AoE.
Yeah. So right, Windwalker, you know, is pretty strong at a fight like Vigilant, where there's just kind of a constant stream of AoE.
Yep.
But not so much that like everybody needs to be swapping to AoE.
Yeah.
The problem again is that it's kind of an easier fight, so you can really get by with everybody just kind of full AoEing, and then eventually the boss dies. Zymox is a pretty decent fight, even though it's really a smaller amount of targets. The fact that you know when it's coming kind of happens all at once. You really have a couple, you know, have the time, and things, especially on Mythic, things will live a little bit longer, so you can really get some of your damage out, as well as if you go to a platform, you have some time to AoE things there. Prototype Pantheon.
I forgot about that fantastic
Windwalker fight.
You just spend the whole final phase with four target cleave and just go nuts.
Really you do. And now that we have Unity, you know, and playing Necrolord and having that, you know, that chance to drop Bone Dust Brew on things, you know, kind of randomly, you can really just go bananas. And especially that when you hit that four targets, you know, at the end, it's really, you know, that's a fight that's really very nicely designed for Windwalkers. You can go into it with everything up. You got Zuen, you know, ready to go and just spin your head off, you know, for till the end of the fight. So that's a really good fight, you know, for Windwalker in Prototype. Windwalker's pretty high up on that.
And after that, I don't think, like, everything after that, there's, like, an ad set that, you know, you gotta cleave down. But, you know, looking at, like, Lyavim, you know, there's the one big set where you've got the double degen ads that, obviously, like, Windwalker, you press SEF and you go nuts on that. But there's not really any other AoE on that fight.
Right. Yeah, it's really, like, Lahuvim's one that Windwalker is good at, but not great.
Yeah.
You know, and because those adds are a big target for everybody. You know, really, Lahuvim, you know, on the flip side of that, Lahuvim was a fight that I felt really great on as a Feral Druid. Even though my overall damage was garbage.
Yeah.
Like, if you looked at damage done to the cubby adds, like, I was annihilating everybody. So that made me feel really good, because that was what
that's
I wanted.
That's the important thing on that fight. Yeah.
Yeah. And that was what I wanted to get out of Feral. So that felt good, even though on the damage meters, you know, I was low. And then other things like rooting adds and stuff like we had to do. But for a Windwalker, Lahuvim's a fight that's good. Like, it's right there. You know, it's like a step away from being a really spectacular Windwalker fight.
Right.
You know, if the adds were a little more common, you know, or even just when you get that double set, if you got a double set more often,
more the timing one time, actually
line up. Yeah, the timings line up really well for Windwalker. And Windwalker's not going to do very much to the cubby adds,
which is a problem. Yeah.
Right. It, you know, in terms of progression, but in terms of, you know, wanting to really maximize what Windwalker is good at, it makes it a little bit easier for you to kind of convince your raid leader, hey, I'm going to save my cooldowns and just blast these adds.
Yeah.
Because I'm garbage on the cubbies no matter what I do.
Yeah.
You know, Halandris is one that Windwalker's damage is very poor, but Windwalker has so much movement that you can stick to things very easily. But if you look at the charts, like,
yeah,
it's not good.
And before the health nerfs, I don't think there would be any reason to ever bring a Windwalker to that fight.
No, I mean, looking at, you know, even just the number of parses, you know, Windwalker's got 150 mythic parses.
there's probably more Brewmaster parses on that fight.
Oh, let's look. But yeah, I mean, even like looking at, you know, Feral, let's see, Brewmaster. Oh, yeah. I mean, there's more than 1,100 Brewmaster parses.
Right. Yeah.
So, yeah. I mean, even looking at Feral and Survival, obviously historically low played fights or low played classes, and Survival is kind of interesting that it hasn't seen a huge swing of people switching to it, because, you know, Beastmaster and Marksmanship are good enough.
Yeah, yeah.
So the people that want to play Survival are jazzed about it, but the people that don't really
just play Marksmanship or just play Beastmaster, both of which are very good right now.
Sure. Yeah.
Hunter has three actually stellar specs right now, which is meanwhile.
Yeah, but they'll still whine about it. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, even like Feral and Survival, you know, do very well on well, survival not as well on Helandris, but Feral does fantastic. But they are the only melee classes that have less representation. And that's, and like you said, this is kind of when Windwalkers start to lose traction a little bit.
Right, because after we get through this, Anduin's got the intermission and the down phases, right?
Right, Anduin's got the Kingsmorn phases that you can line up a lot of your, you know, a lot of your stuff. You have Ring of Peace, which is really fantastic.
Oh, man, so I'm...
To drop it on the, you know, to drop it on Anduin so things don't get back in. That's, you know, really the best spell in the game for that mechanic, because you can place it over there. You know, as Feral or Boomkin, when I'm in there, I have to angle in the right spot to, you know, knock him back with Typhoon or drop Ursox. Like, Windwalker can drop that there, and it's just an area denial for, you know, for the time that it's up.
It is a little bit awkward with the grabby hands approach to doing Kingsmorn. We've lost one, maybe two pulls to just, like, grabby hands gripping an added. It clips the Ring of Peace and gets bounced back.
Yeah, so I mean, that's what I think Ring of Peace is really spectacular for a last second.
Yeah,
you know, like you shouldn't be using it to get things into position. You should be using it just dropped on Anduin right before things get there, just to buy it for a couple of seconds.
I'm playing Brewmaster on the fight, and I'm dropping it preemptively. So I get the Despair add and I move it into position. And by this point, things are starting to get gripped in. And I just drop a Ring of Peace on Anduin. Like, with trying to set it up so that, you know, one of them might bump into it and get bounced back. But it just gives us a little bit of extra safety, right? That we don't have an ad just walk in.
Yeah, I think at that, you know, for that aspect of the fight, it is just the best. You know, which is nice. I mean, it's nice to have that. Windwalker damage on that fight can be spectacular.
Right. The problem is, however, it's all in the Fiendish Souls.
It's not damage to the priority targets.
Yes.
You know, you will annihilate the Fiendish Souls. You will be top damage on Fiendish Souls, you know, up there with your Survival Hunter and your Frost DK and your Destruction Warlocks. But you will be very, you know, little to nothing, you know, on the actual targets that matter.
Right. Like, as
so there are people that love that. You know, you want to just see your name at the top of your list, then awesome. You know, if you want to actually feel like you're contributing to a fight, probably less awesome for Anduin.
Yeah, yeah. Like, Destrolock is an example. We have pulls where one of our Destrolocks is, you know, one of the highest on Fiendish Soul damage, and also one of the highest on Remnant of the Lich King damage.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, like looking at Warcraft logs right now, if I look at overall damage, like, Windwalker is fourth, you know, for overall damage at, you know, about 41k, you know, looking at roughly the, I don't know, 75th percentile, you know, on boss damage. Destruction Warlock is first. You know, Destruction Warlock is 2k higher than second place for overall damage. Then, if you look at damage to bosses, Windwalker is down at the bottom above. The only people that have lost to Windwalker in boss damage are the two Beastmaster Hunters that have killed Anduin. So shame on them.
Wow, actually, literally two.
Yeah, literally two. Even the two Affliction Warlocks did more boss damage than... but then you look at Destruction. You know, Destruction is still 2.5k above second place, but, you know, 4k higher than third place. You know, so compare Destruction to Windwalker, and, you know, Destruction is about just shy of 5k, you know, DPS higher overall. And then looking at boss damage, it's
not
10K,
even close. Yeah.
You know, 10K
literally higher. Double.
So it's, like, there's something, and don't get me wrong, Destruction is overpowered. All you Destruction Warlocks out there who blah, blah, it's PI or whatever. You guys are wrong. Like, but it's a lot, you know. So Windwalker has that niche, and this is really the reason why I switched away from Windwalker. You know, because here's a fight where that niche can shine, and it's just not important. You know, and what Windwalker is not good at is a relatively, like, every boss needs single target damage.
Yeah,
every boss needs AoE.
That's such a, like, it. I understand them wanting to have specs have niches, right? But when your niche is single target damage, it just means you're good on every fight. Right. Like, literally 99% of fights, you're going to be, like, amazing at if your niche is single target damage.
Yeah.
And I mean, as long as you don't have, like, other limitations. Like, traditionally, Feral has not been the best single target damage and also hasn't brought any other meaningful utility. So nobody brings a Feral Druid. But then, like, right now, Feral is good single target damage. And also, like you were mentioning, Ursul's Vortex and Typhoon, both big on setting up the Kingsborn phases for the Grabby Hands.
Right.
And so Feral is significantly better off than Windwalker, which has Ring of Peace, which is amazing. Yeah. But the single target damage is just not there. That's what matters. And then you look at the next three fights, like,
right,
Rigelon literally almost a single target fight from LA DPS. Lords of Dread is a two target cleave fight the whole way through, which is not enough targets for Windwalker.
Right. Windwalker really needs 3 to 4, you know, to really shine. You know, you get 4 targets up all the time, like a Pantheon.
Right.
You'll be fantastic. But Lords of Dread 2, it actually was better for Windwalker when
they had the only AoE stuff is doubled, because all of Windwalker's stuff is AoE.
Yeah, so what would happen was you would drop your Bone Dust Brew on them at that time, and then you just spin. So your AoE, you know, your Whirling Dragon Punch, your Spinning Crane Kick would get buffed, and that was your damage window. You could line up, you know, all that stuff, and it was really great. But then they kind of changed it, and I think it's a great change overall.
Yeah, yeah.
But it was a change that really hurt Windwalker's ability to compare to other specs on that fight.
Right.
And then, you know, Rigelon, like you said, is really pretty much a single target fight unless you're a Destruction Warlock. You know, and then Jailer is pretty much entirely a single target fight.
Right. There's the in phase 3. So I guess in phase 2, there's the charms that go on players, right? Which briefly gives you 4 targets. But it's brief, and they actually, like, they do actually have a lot of health on Mythic. So there is, like, if you had a Windwalker, that might be something where, you know, maybe it lines up and you push SCF and Bone Dust Brew, and you Leg Sweep them, which is actually also great. Leg Sweep and Vrop, both very good for that.
Yep, very useful.
But then the real issue is that you have a single target damage check to make before the Hardened Rage, and if you can't make that, like, unless the Windwalker is being net positive damage on the boss by, like, letting other people ignore the mind controls, letting other people ignore the adds in phase 3, then...
Right. And you really just won't... You wouldn't be in a situation where you would put the Windwalker only on the mind controls, because you want those people back in the fight.
Right, right.
You're going to have everybody blow them up. You know, even if a Windwalker could handle it, it's better for everyone to handle it so that they get out a little bit faster, so that you get them back in the fight and get people, you know, and get those pushes. Yeah. And I mean, looking at the logs, you know, there's 3 listed, you know, Windwalker kills, which, good for them, you know, pretty confident I know who they are without even looking, you know, but they're almost, in terms of damage, you know, they're almost 10K. They're at the bottom. Then Survival Hunter is 900 DPS ahead of them. And then everybody else, you know, so
Feral Druid up at the top there too.
You'll see me. I'll get there. Let us get all through Anduin first.
2 parses. Yeah.
Yeah. All 2 parses. Yep. I know who those are too. And, but yes, I mean, that's, you know, I realistically, you know, in hindsight, I should have played Assassination Rogue, you know, like, they are decent at AoE and they're super strong at single target, whatever. They're a little bit slower. I should have really prioritized that APM and looking for to be as slow as humanly possible, because that's the way I like. But I mean, that, you know, really this tier, I feel like highlights, I guess, and still going, how Windwalker's struggles.
Yeah.
You know, where it's not, Windwalker's not bad. You go into a key, you know, you want to do Mythic Plus, Windwalker's spectacular. You know, a Windwalker in big pulls, in consistent pulls with Unity now, and you know, being able to use, you know, Unity and Invoker's Delight.
Yep.
You know, Windwalker's fantastic in keys. That's where Windwalker's great at. I just don't personally do a lot of keys. Granted, I've done more this tier, than really probably the whole expansion up to this point.
Gotta get that tier.
Yeah, I know. But yeah, it's really, you know, the people that love playing Windwalker and have and are continuing to play with, they should still be having fun because Windwalker is still good at what most people want Windwalker to be good at. It just, you know, it's just not what I want Windwalker to be good at. So I switched. I was happier in Nathria when Windwalker was really spectacular at single target.
I don't remember that.
Because we had Kyrian. Yep, we had Invoker's Delight. Like during those 2 minute or during that window,
that 2 minute window, you could just blast single target.
Nothing, yep. Okay. You could not beat a Windwalker on pull. You could not beat a Windwalker on a fight like Sludge Fist. You know, during that cooldown window, a Windwalker blasting under Weapons of Order with Invoker's Delight was just untouchable. You know, in single target, and a lot of the fights in Nathria, as we'll talk about, season four stuff, really highlighted that 2 minutes, you know,
right.
Then as we got further into Sanctum and now into Sepulchre, you know, it became more of that 1 minute, focus in Sanctum, and now Sepulchre is kind of a mix. Sepulchre almost highlights 3 minutes, you know, and kind of longer cooldown timings because a lot of the bigger damage phases come right. even more spread out.
Like using Anduin as an example, right. Your two intermission phases where you get to do like double damage or whatever it is, 150% damage.
Right.
It's 3 minutes apart. It's on a timer. It's always 3 minutes apart. There's no way to make it faster. At least you skip one entirely. Like if you skip phase two and right. the second intermission, great. But other than that, it's 3 minutes apart. So if you can have something like a Ravenous Frenzy that is a, you know, very powerful still, even after the nerf, 3 minute cooldown, right. Then, you know, you're going to crush it. Lords of Dread actually is a 2 minute fight because the right. swarm phases are 2 minutes apart. But it's also one that benefits from you cleaving two targets while it's active.
Right.
So,
yeah. So, I mean, this is just Windwalker has the power. The fights in the raid just don't reflect it. Windwalker is still very powerful in Mythic Plus, where it's really always been powerful. And from, I'm assuming, probably still pretty powerful in PvP, you know, but really there's just not as many fights as the expansion has gone on. You know, the fights have kind of shifted away from Windwalker's strength.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense. So, kind of actually skipping around a little bit. So, we're getting new talent trees in Dragonflight. Monk has actually never had real talent trees. We've always right. had the mop style talents because, of course, Monk was introduced in Mists of Pandaria.
That was a fun realization when I was trying to think about things. I was like, what would a Windwalker, you know, talent tree right? look like? And, oh, I have no basis for this.
Right.
The closest we had is artifact weapons, you know, in terms yeah. of having really a tree style system. So, yeah, it's very weird as somebody who's played for all that time, but really in terms of monk
yeah. stuff,
only been using this talent style.
Yeah. What are some things that you would like to see on the talent tree that maybe actually would kind of help with this like one trick pony scenario that Windwalker has found itself in?
Yes. So that's actually something I spent a lot of time in. I've got kind of the early draft of an article about it, really waiting to see, you know, once we get alpha and once we get some information, what we have is, you know, and what kind of changes, to start asking for. I would really like Windwalker, and I advocated for this going into Shadowlands as well. I think Windwalker can very easily have that flexibility
mm-hmm.
to be, you know, to be able to be single target focused as well, you know, or AoE focused or somewhere in between. I think Windwalker has the kit to be able to do that.
Right.
Where, you know, if you want to focus on single target damage, you're going to lean into more talents that are aimed at Rising Sun Kick.
Yeah.
You know, bringing back Tornado Kicks, you know, as people love the double backflip.
Right.
You know, or, you know, Swift Roundhouse and, you know, stuff like that, Sunrise Technique, whatever they were, you know, they all have, it's the same things had a dozen different names, you know, and other minor stuff over the years. But You know, bringing back a little bit more focus on that, you know, leaning into some of the, you know, like what we have now in the Zuin's Treasure, you know, legendary where, you know, Rising Sun Kick benefits Fist of Fury, Fist of Fury benefits Rising Sun Kick. That can be more of a all purpose style, you know, where you have more of that interplay. And then you can lean into more AoE focus where, you know, maybe Mark of the Crane is a talent you take. Yeah. You know, in the tree
and then you just where, don't take it out of a single target fight.
Right. And you just don't need it. Right. And there's going to be a break point where you're going to snag that talent and you're going to go bananas, you know, and really spin to win. You know, so I think having those options, having, you know, three, again, really not having a great idea of what talent trees are going to look like. You know, you could have three paths. You could have a Rising Sun Kick focus path for single target damage. You can have a Spinning Crane Kick focus path for AoE damage. Then you have a Fist of Fury focus path, you know, where you bring back Fury of Zuin, you know, as from the the Azurite traits, you know, maybe the AoE focus one, you know, brings back, you know, Mark of the Crane and the other things that buff that, or maybe Mark of the Crane is still there, but gets significantly more powerful with talents. You know, maybe Rushing Jade Wind becomes this AoE, you know, generator like it used to be. You know, have it replace Blackout Kick, you know, like it used to be, or maybe I can't remember.
That was before my time.
I'm trying to remember. It replaced Spinning Crane Kick, I think.
That would make sense. Whatever.
It's but yeah, so have it, you know, replace that kind of stuff. I think there's a ton of options for flexibility, and Windwalker has that kit. You know, where you're talking about things like Chi Explosion. You know, being a really flexible, maybe Chi Explosion is that third, you know, middle ground focus where, all right, here's a fight where there's a little bit of single target, a little bit of AoE. I'm okay with not being spectacular. I don't want to focus on one. So here's Chi Explosion that I can pick and choose how many Chi I spend, you know, and stuff like that as kind of that capstone, you know, of that direction and be able to focus on that. So I think Windwalker's talent tree has tons of potential. You know, in whatever direction they want to take it. You know, maybe if they want to focus on the cooldowns, maybe you have Serenity as a capstone on one side, as a single target capstone.
Right.
Maybe you have Storm Earth and Fire, the original Storm Earth and Fire, as a spread cleave capstone option. And then
I'm going to need you to explain what you mean by the original SE.
Yes, that's probably. Yeah. So originally, Storm Earth and Fire was not a cooldown. It was a toggle that you could put it on a target, and you would send out your spirits. And so you would attack your target, and you could send two different spirits out for them to attack.
So thinking of like a what's the four target or two target cleave fight from Antorus? You know, you would put one or two of your spirits on one, you would be on the other, and.
Well, right. So the way that it worked was if you had one spirit out, you did a certain amount of damage less. You know, I think it was you did 55% of your normal damage.
Right.
So total, you're doing 110%. If you had your second spirit out, then you're doing 45%. So total, you're doing 135% damage.
Right.
You know, and that could use some balancing and tweaks and stuff. But really, the most important thing was that it allowed for spread cleave.
Right.
Which is something that melee does not have.
Right.
And is something that relatively few non-dot classes have.
Yeah.
So Windwalker had that, and it was great in theory. It was really rough in practice. There was a lot of things that we didn't figure out. I'm sure Hina's watching the stream right now, and he can remember when we were, you know, we got halfway through Warlords of Draenor. You know, we had played with it all through Mists, and we got halfway through Warlords of Draenor before we found out or realize, whatever you want to call it, that they needed their own Tiger Palm debuff and their own Rising Sun Kick debuff. We didn't know that for years, you know, and we were pretty good at that kind of stuff. Like, it wasn't like we weren't looking, you know, so it just had a lot of things that didn't make sense. You know, a lot of people used it in single target because it kind of read that way, even though it really didn't. So people lost damage that way. But what I'm saying is, if on a fight like Lords of Dread, you could just put your other spirit on one and then you stay. You don't have to worry about target switching. You can stay on, you know, one target, your spirit's on the other, it's copying your damage, you're doing 10% just in its very existence.
Right, you know, right.
You look at a fight like, you know, Pantheon, you're going to have both of them out. So now you have three of you spinning around.
Yep.
You know, and then, so right, so that could be a capstone option, you know, as a spread AoE option. And then maybe the, you know, the AoE kind of mythic plus type capstone, you know, and I don't even know if the capstones are even in this system, you know, so as in the same way they have been. But maybe the AoE focused one is, you know, just the fact that spinning crane kick now generates Mark of the Crane stacks. You know, simple as that. That can be something you talent into if you need to, if you're going to be in big target situations.
Okay. Okay.
So I think Windwalker has tons of really great options they can draw on. They don't have to reinvent any wheels.
Yeah.
We have the wheels from the past. Just, they just have to be used.
Yep. So here's a, here's a fun idea. Talenting out of Fists of Fury.
No, I like. No, I would rather talent out of Spinning Crane Kick. I think Fists of Fury is just. Yeah, I'd rather talent out of Spinning Crane Kick.
So all those tiers that it's been correct to, like, either not cast or to cancel Fists of Fury. Right. Just imagine being able to talent out of Fists of Fury and not even have the ability to accidentally push that button on your bars.
Yeah, I mean, I think the gain there would have to be really something. I mean, you know, but that's me. That's somebody that, you know, likes. I like Fists of Fury for the downtime. I like it for the 3 to 4 seconds where I'm not having to press anything. I can think about what to press next.
Yeah.
Other people don't like that downtime. And I understand.
I'm one of those people. I don't like Fists of Fury. Like, I mean, I like Fists of Fury because Fists of Fury is a cool ability, but I don't like pressing the button. I don't like pushing it and then having to sit there. I don't like pushing it and sitting there and then having to cancel it to interrupt something or to stun something.
Right. Well, right. That is something that I, yeah, that just should, yeah.
Yeah.
The fact that you can't interrupt during Fists of Fury
drives me up a wall.
When the interrupt is called Spear Hand Strike, or, you know, like, it's a punch with your fist. You're already furiously fisting. Why not just hit them,
you
know, and have an interrupt? Like, it doesn't make any sense. You know, I would get it if the interrupt was a kick. If it was called a kick, all right, I can't. I'm Fist of Furying. My fists are going crazy. I can't throw a kick in here. I'll fall over. You know, but it doesn't make any sense. When you're already punching, why can't you just throw in a punch that interrupts them?
You know, it's extra funny. You can interrupt during Spinning Crane Kick because of the way that, like,
right?
Because the way the channels longer work than the GCD, yeah. And they let you cast during the end of the channel, and
that you can interrupt during Whirling Dragon Punch. You know, assuming it doesn't take you out of range.
Well, that's a big assumption.
Like, well, right. Or get you killed because, you know, oh my God, there's a mechanic under my feet now. But yeah, the whole thing with Fist of Fury, and I would be okay if that is something you talent into.
That would be an awesome talent. On. Like, okay, like, so you pick up Fist of Fury, right? And then there's a choice talent or whatever after that, right, where you can pick up, like, you know, maybe one of them is Fist of Fury parries now, like the PvP talent, and one of them is like a Fist of Fury, like you can interrupt during Fist of Fury.
Yep. Or a slow, you know, let it reduce their movement speed to 0%, you know, or, you know, the Fist of Fury stunning, you know, stuff like that. So the way that I looked at a lot of these options, well, but when you have to choose, you know, like, I think one of the things that I really liked in the past that I wish this would kind of be the way things work is the old glyph system, mm-hmm. You know, where you could go in and say, all right, you know, there were a time that you could decide, I wanted a glyph that I might be pulling this out of my butt, but I also might be remembering accurately. You know, but there was a glyph that, you know, your blackout kick left a dot, you know? So, okay. If I, you know, if there's single target, here's a little bit more single target damage. Here's kind of a different style that my blackout kick works. Right. On the flip side, there might have been a glyph, or there could be a glyph that, okay, now my blackout kick hits two targets, you know, like we have in Torghast.
Yeah.
Torghast opened up a lot of cool functionality for things.
Yeah.
That could, you know, with those tweaks, things like Tiger Palm dashing, you know, that little 5 yards be a glyph.
So that's the Kiefer Skyreach legendary as well, which is also just a fun legendary to use. Also has gotten
so
me
much fun.
Killed so many times. It's kind of the Whirling Dragon Punch effect. Like you press Whirling Dragon Punch, something happens and you die. Or, well, this is like you walk out for a mechanic and it just absentmindedly, like your Tiger Palm button is lit up. You can push it. You push Tiger Palm and you're back in the mechanic and you die.
Yeah. Yeah, no, and that's like, but that's what I think, where if you could have options, 2 to 3 options for these major buttons, right? These core buttons, your Rising Sun kicks, your Fists of Fury, your Spinning Crane kicks, right? Pick, if Blizzard wants to pick 4 or 5 core abilities for Windwalker, or, you know, for each spec, and then you have 3 options off of that.
Yeah.
You know, maybe your Fists of Fury. I wrote all this down somewhere. I'm trying to remember, but I wrote all this down somewhere.
Hina in chat is also confirming that the blackout kick dot was in fact a glyph.
Okay. Excellent. Good. I'm a genius. All right. So, but yeah, so I think there's a lot of really cool options for that kind of stuff, where you can, and then you can change, let them change like talents, right?
Yeah. I don't expect them to ever bring back the old glyph system for a number of reasons, but I agree. The old, like, major minor glyphs we basically still have minor glyphs, but the old major glyph system was nice when you didn't end up locked into the same 3 glyphs all the time.
Right. And I think with all of the stuff we've seen since then, the glyph system could be used as a pseudo talent system.
Yeah.
You know, because the concern obviously about these trees, and the reason that they got away from the trees, was because a lot of things were mandatory, or a lot of things were fluff. You know, 5% damage to this is not exciting. It doesn't change how you play, unless, you know, it then turns us into dropping Fists of Fury or Never Rising Sun kicking, you know, stuff like that. Yep. That has happened. You know, but there are a lot of things in the past that we've seen. Oh, I found it. That would be really nice to improve, you know. So for example, and you know, Rising Sun kick could have 3 glyphs, right? These major abilities have 3 glyphs. You have Glory of the Dawn, you know, so the chance to do the backflip, Glory of the Dawn / tornado kicks, chance for it to hit a second time, let that chance be crit based. Right, give Windwalker some crit focus.
Give more specs crit and mastery interactions.
And I think Windwalker fits that really well, because we're martial artists. You know, the whole point is to be able to hit in the right way. Right, crit really should be a powerful, and it is now for Windwalker. Don't get me wrong, but it is kind of incidentally rather than kind of purposefully.
Yeah.
You know, maybe Rising Sun kick, another glyph, is what we have in Zuen's Treasure. You know, crits reduce Fists of Fury's cooldown. That was the best tier set, part of the best tier set we've ever had. Let's keep that going. Keep that an option. You know, and then you have Sunrise Technique, you know, which was a lesser used Azurite trait that increases damage taken by the target, right? So, you know, that just increases the, you know, you do X amount more physical damage to that target.
Right.
So you can kind of decide what manner would you like your Rising Sun kick. Do you want a little bit more burst with Glory of the Dawn? A little bit more AoE by, you know, Fists of Furies, you know, or somewhat, you know, a little bit more, you know, kind of sustained single target with something like Sunrise Technique. You know, similarly, Fists of Fury, right? Maybe there's a glyph that it does 100% damage to all targets. Or maybe it only damages one target, but does 50% more damage to that target. Or maybe for each target hit, it increases the crit chance of Rising Sun kick. You know, stuff like that. There's a lot of really cool options that we've seen over the years that, you know, we can use. Blackout kick is the third example that I had, is, you know, leaving a dot on the target, which I'm looking at now, was also part of the teaching of the monastery. I think it was a passive back in Mists. You know, if you're behind the target, it places a dot. And I think if you're in front of the target, it heals you a little bit. But, right, so a dot on that target hitting additional targets like we see in Torghast with shadow boxing treads,
right.
Or hit scheme, you know, where the blackout kicks in between increase the damage of your next rising sun kick. You know, so there's just tons of beautiful options for that.
I would love to see the blackout kick, rising sun kick thing from Mistweaver get ported over.
Right.
Where you like blackout kicks and every blackout kick, what is it? So it's Tiger Palms make your blackout kicks, like every Tiger Palm gives you an extra blackout kick the next time you press it. Every blackout kick has a chance to reset the cooldown on your rising sun kick. So maybe not the whole thing, but like getting the extra blackout kick cast is cool and fun.
Yeah, I mean the best design, the point that most people point to Windwalkers in terms of like prime design was that Tomb of Sargeras tier bonus. You know, and that was because we had a lot of interplay between our abilities. Yeah. You know, Fist of Fury and Rising Sun Kick synergized beautifully. And Windwalker's a spec that makes sense. You want that flow from one ability to the other. You know, functionally, for people like you and for others that are not a big fan of Fist of Fury's channeling. Back in Tomb of Sargeras, people don't realize that was towards the highest end that Windwalker had of actual downtime, you know, in between button presses. However, it was active downtime. You were still Fist of Furying. You were still doing damage. It wasn't like downtime as an assassination rogue or downtime as a feral druid, you know, where you're sitting and waiting for your resources. You had ebbs and flows. You had that function. And that's where Windwalker, you know, really felt the best. You know, that's why they brought it back for Zuin's Treasure. It's a fan favorite. I would have liked for it to be a little bit stronger, so it would have been, you know, the play.
The legendary that people used, yeah.
You know, I should say I would have liked Invoker's Delight to maybe be half as strong, because it's really Invoker's Delight that's the problem, not everything else.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, I just think, you know, Blizzard, and I'm hoping, and I've been advocating for a long time, that I'm hoping they look back and they really find the things that worked and bring them back, rather than trying to remake things. I think the new tier set bonuses are fine. I think it's a good idea. But I would really like, you know, tier sets to almost kind of still go away for a period of time and really kind of get down to what made these specs and these classes work well in the past, rather than keep continually trying to rework things. We have a lot of new players that never played in Tomb of Sargeras. And you know, Zuin's Treasure was not strong enough to use. Like, I'd like for them to be able to really feel how that felt, you know, in such, you know, the smoothness and the flow. And I'm sure other specs have that thing, you know, that think
about. There's a lot of potential for just like having an old tier set bonus, like a 4-piece bonus or combined 2-piece, 4-piece bonus, be just a talent.
Yeah.
And that's the kind of thing I'm definitely with you there. I would like to see those in there. Like, and the kind of glyphs, some of the, like, there are some glyphs that I don't think should ever come back. And it's mostly because they just don't do anything. Like, they're, you know, a very passive damage increase. Right. They don't change how things play in any meaningful fashion. And those are the kinds of talents that I don't want in the talent tree, right? But there's still some good ones from back in the day.
Yeah.
I'm also totally unrelated. Realizing just now, an hour and change, actually not an hour, 50 minutes into this, I forgot to press start recording on Zencastr.
Oh no!
So that's going to make my editing session very annoying, because I'm going to have to download the video and rip the audio from it.
I mean, that's what we do for all of our roundtables every year.
Yeah.
Because one of us forgets to press play, but we always stream it for people that can't be at their computer, and because then streams, you know, remember everything. So yeah, no, it is a pain.
I'm sorry in advance, whoever, people listening to this in the audio version in the future, sorry, that's why the audio quality sucks this week.
Yeah. We can blame Anomaly.
Yep that's the plan. But yeah, so yeah, I'm pretty excited about what we're potentially going to get with the talent system. And one more thing, actually, before we move on to season 4 stuff, Are there any Covenant abilities that you want to come back in the talent tree?
I mean, for my my answer to that personally, for my desire to press as few buttons as possible in this game, would be Fallen Order.
Oh my god.
So,
no.
If you tell me there's a button that I could just press every couple minutes and it's going to do a big chunk of my damage, I'm in, you know, like let them do it.
Oh my god, Babs.
I would like the style of play that comes from Kyrian to be an option. I would like that style of play to be more what Serenity really is.
Right, kind of. Well, actually, maybe just making Serenity the Windwalker Weapons of Order.
Right. I think Weapons of Order as a buff works better than Serenity as a buff. I think it makes more sense. I think it's functionally better. I think it's a better Serenity. I think the play style that came from Feyline Stomp, which, you know, had just that extra little button that people could press, you know, I think it kind of smoothed out some of that downtime that people weren't liking.
Right.
While still giving a little bit of that interplay. I liked that Chi Burst resets the cooldown, you know, of Feyline Stomp.
Unintended interaction, but yeah.
I did. I thought that's probably my favorite aspect of Feyline Stomp, you know, is that you can choose, all right, I'm going to stomp twice, or, oh man, I'm going to have to move soon. Let me save my Chi Burst. I like that. And then I think the spin to win style that, you know, was generated from, you know, Necrolord, I think is okay.
So we only have so many talents in the tree, right? Like, thinking back through all the different stuff that Windwalker has had, are you saying all of them? You would like all the Covenant abilities over some of the stuff from previous?
No, not necessarily want the Covenant abilities, but want the style that they create.
Right, so you want to be able to spin to win. You want to be able to have that kind of Serenity Weapons of Order play style. Yeah.
So I think, like, the way that I would... So Weapons of Order, I think, could just be Serenity, right? Yeah. Boom, problem solved. Feyline Stomp, I think, gets generated. Feyline Stomp served the spot that Strike of the Windlord did, that people loved that.
Right, okay.
Right? It just gave you that one extra button. It wasn't overwhelming.
Yeah.
But it did a decent amount of damage, not a ton. Strike obviously did more.
Yeah, but it just Feyline Stomp does nothing.
It helped, right? It helped kind of fill in that gap in the rotation just a little bit without it being overwhelming, in my opinion.
Yeah.
And then I would like something like the way Necrolord works now, where once you hit it, you spin for 10 seconds. Let that be, like, if Mark of the Crane is strong enough.
Yeah.
Or let it be a buff, you know, that falls off after, like, let it be. Once you hit 5 targets, right, it falls off. And once it falls off, they all fall off, you know, or something like that. Let it be a personal buff rather than a debuff.
Right.
You know, once you hit X number of targets, it just goes. So there's going to be that breakpoint at whatever where you decide to forsake everything else and spin.
Yeah.
And I think that's okay. You know, I think that's an okay, you know, method to do things. Or maybe you just... spin Tiger Palm, spin Tiger Palm, spin Tiger Palm, you know, so that you keep up your resources or you pool a little bit so you can spin back and forth. I think the style that is generated from all of the Covenant abilities, because Fallen Order just lets you press a button and go to sleep for a little bit, like, is good. So I think, you know, Fallen Order, that shouldn't really actually be a function of Windwalker. as much as I like it. You know, I understand I am in the minority for that sort of thing, but
I mean, if you want to push a button and then go to sleep, you could play a rogue.
Well, and right, and that's what I thought I was getting out of Feral Druid, but then Owl Weaving exists and really puts the kibosh on that. But yeah, so I think the style that comes from 3 of the 4 covenants is really a very good style for Windwalker and can be an option.
Yeah,
you know, going forward in very different and healthier ways for the spec.
Okay. Yeah, I can see that. I definitely like the idea. So weapons of order for Brewmaster and for Mistweaver can just stay dead. Like that one, it's a totally different spell. It's the same name, but it's a totally different spell. It can just stay dead. The Windwalker weapons of order, though, definitely would make sense. It's like a Serenity kind of cooldown.
Right. Yep. And that's I think that because the way Serenity works now is poopy. You know, it worked better in the past. They tweaked it to try and make it better and somehow made it worse.
I don't even know how it works now. I've not read the tooltip for that ability since Legion.
Honestly, I can't tell you off the top of my head. because the only time you use it is with Weapons of Order. And when you do that, Weapons of Order is the more impactful
right.
of those abilities.
Weapons of Order is the important one.
Right. It makes things free and you do a little bit more damage. You know, the making things free doesn't matter because Weapons of Order reduces the cooldown or the cost of things.
Right, your Rising Sun Kick, you have the chi cost reduction.
Yeah, so that's the better aspect of it. You know, reducing cooldowns I think is good. I think that can stay in. That's the aspect of Serenity that works really well with Weapons of Order. So that can stay in. But really the cost of things being reduced to zero really doesn't matter with Weapons of Order, but Weapons of Order, I think, does it better.
Yeah.
I think the refund mechanic is better than the free mechanic.
Right. That makes sense. Okay. Well, speaking of some of these old raids we've been talking about, we've got Season 4 coming up in the relatively near future. We don't know. We don't know when it's coming. 9.2.5, I think, will be around sooner rather than later.
Yeah.
And then sometime in the future, after 9.2.5. So they have confirmed that Season 4 is not coming, like it's not linked to 9.2.5. We will get 9.2.5 first. And then sometime after that point, we will get Season 4 release. So we will get the cross-faction rating. Other quality of life changes like fix-ups to catch-up mechanics like Renown will be coming with 9.2.5 whenever that releases. Fingers crossed soon. My mage is almost level 60. and then sometime after that, we're going to get Season 4, which as a recap, because we've been talking about Dragonflight, but as a recap, is all of the raids from Shadowlands. So every week there's going to be one that's got a special bonus on it. They're still tuning the specific affixes. We've talked about them previously on the podcast, but there's special affixes on it. We don't know how difficult or easy it's going to be tuned.
Right.
But there's one raid that has this bonus that you can go in, you can get higher eye level loot. Next week, it's a different raid, and it's just going to rotate between Castle Nathria, Sanctum of Domination, and Sepulchre of the First Ones.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we actually have very early on the PTR, there were some vendors added around the Great Vault in Orvos that now have items on them. The items that they have are raid drops.
Yep.
We have, for example, there you can buy an Old Warrior's Soul, or a Jathis, or a Cruciform Vein Ripper.
Yeah.
Some of us didn't get those the first time around.
Some of us had to threaten to kick a resto shaman to get one.
So the vendors got items added to them. And this is like honestly not something that I was expecting. We also got a blue post, which I don't have handy right now, but there's a blue post explaining how this is gonna work. We're gonna be getting a quest when Season 4 starts. You kill, I believe it's 30 raid bosses that have the bonus affix on them. So you can't just go and clear all 3 raids 1 week and be done. It's going to take you at least 3 weeks to get the 30 boss kills. More realistically, for a lot of us, it's going to take us 4 weeks because we might not get back through Mythic Sire Denathrius or Mythic, you know, Sylvanas the first time back through. I actually don't even think it has to be Mythic either, so maybe we just go in normal.
Yeah, I don't believe so. Well, that's something that I don't know if we've really seen. You know, like
yeah.
There's not been a really a conf- a confirmation of what the difficulty is going to be.
We know it's going to be normal, heroic, mythic, but what we don't know is whether, like, the mythic we're getting is going to be mythic. Can't see me, if you're listening, doing air quotes, mythic, or if it's going to be mythic. Like, is this good? And I think it can't be real mythic, right? Because we're not going to be able to spend, 3 weeks progressing mythic Sirens and Athreus again. It's going to go away for 2 weeks.
Right. The difficulty can't be right. Well, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but we've seen that the loot can be mythic quality.
Yeah, but you don't have to get it from doing mythic difficulty.
And so that aspect almost leads me to believe that mythic, at least in my impression, and I could be wrong, is that mythic difficulty won't exist. Is that this is going to be a heroic thing, a flex-based thing. So, you don't have to go in with 20. And then you can work to upgrade these items to mythic quality, which will then just make further clears even easier.
So my thinking is that this is actually, we're going to have a mythic difficulty. And it's just that basically you can shortcut. Well, actually, no, because there's a single fixed difficulty off of the vendor, right?
Right.
So, okay, let's actually finish talking about the acquisition before we get into all of that. So you get a quest when Season 4 releases. It has you kill 30 bosses. You kill 30 bosses, you get a coin and a second quest. The second quest has you kill 20 bosses. You complete that, you get a second coin and another quest to kill 10 bosses. You complete that, you get your third and final coin. So that's a very important piece of this. You only get 3 coins. So you can buy 3 items. And what that means is you're not going to be able to, like, just get full mythic gear by clearing, normal and collecting your coins. You're going to get 3. And so that really means that you're limited to kind of to looking at these specialty items, the Vein Rippers of the world, before basically without looking at anything else. And the staggered, like, the delay on this, right? The 3 weeks at least before you can get the first one kind of serves as a way to make sure you don't, jump the gun and buy something and then get it in, one of your early clears. But because of the rotation, you're just not going to have that much time in any individual rate. You're going to have 1/3 the chances to get a Vein Ripper or a Jathis or a Gavel, that you would have otherwise. The second piece of it is, so this vendor, it's got fixed item levels for all of the items. The coins are the same. Doesn't matter which difficulty boss you kill, the coin is the same. What it does give you when you kill a raid boss that has this bonus affix on it, you get a currency, like an item. You can basically use like WOD Valor where you could upgrade items. Like you, I don't know if you can upgrade your other non-vendor items. It's actually something I should pull back up.
Yeah, I'm not sure either.
But you can, the items from the vendor, you take your currency that you get from killing bosses and you use it to upgrade those items. I think you can use it to upgrade other, what they call faded items. Faded is the affix. So, what this is going to do is two things. First off, it guarantees you're going to be able to get some of these items. Like, I cleared Painsmith, I don't know how many times, in Sanctum, and never saw a mythic. We had Vein Rippers drop. They went to a Demon Hunter and an Enhancement Shaman and another Demon Hunter. And so I never got any. Like,
just a tank, you whiny baby.
I had heroic ones the whole tier. I used heroic ones from like week 4 until partway into Sepulcher.
Yeah.
No bueno.
Yeah, I definitely like the potential that they have here for that. Like, and we talked about this. I don't know if you were involved, but we talked about this in Discord, for a bit. To like going forward, the Valor system, integrating something like that, the Valor system back into raids is a really good idea. you know, yeah. because the thing that people didn't like about the old Valor system, the original Valor system, was that it was separate. It was another avenue. It was, okay, I've got to grind Valor just so I can go get raid loot. And, right. you know, really, you know, the Valor cap right now has been way too low, but that's
yeah
an easy fix. And, you know, really, I think it's something that, you know, they can continue to use because you can be someone like you, you know, and really want a certain item that just doesn't drop. You know, so maybe, you know, you can buy that item with Valor, or maybe you get Valor to buy coins, you know, the old coin system, and say, okay, on this boss, I'm going to use 5 coins that I've saved up, and I am going to guarantee myself a piece, or I am going to guarantee this piece off of this boss, you know, yeah. and I think there's just a lot of options that they can use for that kind of stuff. That's yeah. all really cool.
Yeah. And so I actually went and found the blue post because I was like, I don't want to be wrong about the ability to upgrade non-coin items. Sure. But I found it. And so a couple things. First off, killing bosses on heroic or mythic difficulty, so there will be a mythic difficulty, will okay. drop a shard of an upgrade item, and collecting enough, currently 20, will combine to upgrade faded gear to their heroic or mythic versions. So what this means is that you collect 20, you upgrade an item to heroic or mythic. It doesn't matter what difficulty it was. They actually, Skarzard posted a clarification later. If you have a heroic upgrade item, it will upgrade an LFR or a normal item to heroic. So you don't have to like go through every difficulty when you're doing your upgrade. Okay. You can also take a mythic upgrade item and turn your LFR item directly into a mythic item.
Ooh, that's lovely.
So you can actually, like, just completely, like, if we're clearing mythic every week, right? Sure. They also, there's another clarification we'll get to. But if you're clearing mythic every week, you can just, like, every 2 weeks, like, just take, like, an item and make it a mythic item. So right. I can take, I'm not going to be able to take my old Vein Rippers, but if I get, you know, a heroic or a normal or an LFR, God forbid, it's with LFR as a trap. Vein Ripper, I can take that and make it a mythic Vein Ripper, which is going to be, that's going to be amazing.
Right, but it allows you to really benefit from playing more.
Right.
You know, like if you want to, if there is that thing, you could run that twice, you know, you could run every difficulty. And if you, and then it doesn't matter what difficulty you get it in.
Yeah.
You're able to use it.
So since these upgrade items are split, so you're going to get basically heroic shards and you're going to get mythic shards. That means, of course, that the boss kills for those, like, they're not going to be connected in the way that, if you remember, like, the Eternal Palace upgrade item,
right.
Where you would clear through, you know, if you cleared heroic and you went and cleared mythic, you would get less from mythic because it would just give you the difference. You know, mythic gave, you know, I don't remember what, it's like 4, and heroic gave 3. So if you did heroic, you get your 3, and you go do mythic and you get 1, so you had 4 total. Since these are separate, you're going to be able to get, you know, you could clear both, but you don't. If you're a mythic raider, you don't need to clear both because the heroic one can't bump things to mythic. It can only bump them to heroic.
Right.
The other clarification here is that for those quests, those kill quests, those do count unique boss kills for the week. So if we talk about like Sanctum of Domination, killing the Terror Grew on mythic is 1 kill. If you then went and killed it on heroic, it would be 0 additional kills. So it functions like the Great Vault does, where like, which vault, very annoying in this way, but the vault, you know, every boss you kill, like you need 10 distinct bosses or 8 right. distinct bosses, whatever it is now, to get your full through vault. So to get your kill quest complete, you need to kill different bosses every week. And so that might mean that, you know, you kill five bosses on Mythic and you go and you kill the other five on Heroic in order to get your 10 boss kills. But right. You're not going to need to, week one, do three clears of Castle Nathria or something in order to get your dinar, which is what they call the coins. You're going to get your coin week three at the soonest, because that's how, like, every tier this expansion has 10 to 11 bosses.
Right.
So.
Yeah. I think it shows, you know, obviously there's going to be some bits and pieces, some things we kind of just have to see. But I think one of the things with them, you know, removing Valor Cap, with them setting up things this way, is really, to me, it gives me the impression that they're listening.
Yeah.
And that the people that are driving the ship now are doing so with our best interest in mind.
I don't know if I can go that far, but they're at least listening.
The people that are being listened to are doing so. The people that have always had our best interest in mind are now being listened to a little bit more than they used to.
Yeah, I can get behind that one. Yeah.
That's the best way to put it. Because obviously those people have always been there.
Right.
You know, but they just haven't been listened to. So I think that's probably, the truth of the matter. And it gives me good, I mean, I've been saying for a long time that, you know, I've been playing this game for well over a decade, you know, and if you consider the fact that I get paid to write guides and all that stuff, I've been doing this game professionally for a long time. And, you know, but Shadowlands really, and BFA and into Shadowlands, and just kind of my feelings on how Windwalker had been and the game as a whole, really was using up a lot of the remaining goodwill that I had.
Yeah, they had to.
So, like, my wife has never believed me when I said this, but, you know, I've been saying that Blizzard has until the end of progression of the first tier of next expansion to keep me around. If they can get through that, they will have earned enough goodwill that I will play for another extended period of time. But if by the end of Prague of the first tier of next expansion, I'm like, this game is just not doing it. You know, it's not worth it. It's not fun. I hate this about it. Then I'll just stop, you know, and it's, you know, it will have been a great run and a fabulous part of my life. But, you know, Shadowlands really, you know, hurt from, you know, in certain ways. So it feels like they're getting to what I'm hoping they are going to get to, you know, and we'll have to see in Dragonflight and stuff. And what we'll see, what we'll be telling is, once we get Alpha and Beta, is how do they iterate on things?
Yep.
Are they listening to us then?
Yep.
Because that was a big problem for Shadowlands, is we gave them a lot of issues in Shadowlands, and Alpha and Beta.
Very few
a
of big them got problem addressed.
In BFA. Right. And very few got addressed at the time. A lot of them have been addressed since then.
Right.
You know, but they stuck their foot in the ground and said, nah, we're not going to change it. We like it this way. You know, and then later we're like, oh, you know, they're throwing us a bone. Yep. I don't like that. Keeping what's broken and fixing it later as a reward, you know, the benevolence of them finally reaches to the point that they fix something that we've been asking for them to be fixed for a while.
Yeah.
You know, so if they iterate more proactively, you know, I think, you know, they will keep me around, and they will, you know, keep me doing all the stuff that I've been doing. And I'm hopeful that that's the case. You know, and it's, the prognosis is looking better and better.
Yeah. I am very curious what our talent tree is going to look like. I kind of getting back to that. Like, I'm very curious what our talent tree is going to look like, given that Monk has never had one, right? This is going to be one, like, I expect that Demon Hunter and Monk are going to have a ton of iteration in their talent trees.
Yep.
Just there's no old talent trees to look back on and be like, oh, this worked and this really didn't work. And, you know, there's fewer things to go back and grab, although Monk has it a lot better than Demon Hunter because it's got two extra expansions of cool stuff to go and take. But, yeah.
Yeah. But I will at no point in my WoW career ever feel bad for Demon Hunter. So they brought that on themselves.
Yes. Well, actually, no, I take that back. I feel bad for Vengeance Demon Hunter every tier.
Yeah, I don't. They Vengeance pretty much doesn't exist in my brain.
I've been actually tanking with the Vengeance Demon Hunter pretty much 100% of the time. Yeah, I know. Since actually all expansion. The whole expansion, pretty much. Cast on Athria, Sanctum, half of Sepulchre. And current co-tank is not Vengeance. So,
yeah, it's a brave new world.
It's a brave new world. Tanking with something that isn't an edgelord.
Yeah, well, and I just
actually, that's not true. I'm like, tanking with Blood DK, so.
Yeah, right. It hasn't gotten much better. Yeah, I think, you know, for that, like, Demon Hunter just, you know, always seemed like Monk's edgier, you know, older sibling that never really broke out of that super edgy phase, you know, or maybe, I guess maybe younger sibling for Vengeance, but older sibling for Havoc.
Well,
no, you know what? No, I'm going to say younger sibling across the board because like a little bit more favorites get away with a little bit more, you know, at least from a Havoc perspective.
Yeah, I mean, Vengeance had exactly one expansion where it really, like, worked mechanically. And then since then, it's been awful mechanically, but sometimes fine numerically.
Right.
So, yeah.
Bring back Legion
Vengeance.
I get all that stuff, you know, and I think there'll be a lot of really interesting things, you know, that how they're gonna go over the next, you know, couple weeks is because I do think, you know, like you do, that we're gonna see 925, you know, I'm thinking probably before the middle or end of June at the latest.
I wouldn't be surprised earlier. I would not be surprised to see 9.2.5 first week of June.
Yes.
I don't think we can see it sooner than that, but first week of June, I would not be surprised.
Right. That last week, you know, whatever the Tuesday is of, yeah. So like the 31st of May is a Tuesday. Like I think the 31st or the 7th, those would really be kind of the days that I would expect to be.
Right.
I think end of June at the latest. And then I think once we get that, I think there'll be a week or two and then we'll start getting alpha and, you know, I love being in alpha and beta over summer because I have more time, you know, to sit and stream and to really look into that stuff. I mean, that when we had an alpha over summer was when I made that enormous spreadsheet for Windwalkers in Legion. You know, so I had a lot more time. So I'm hopeful that we'll be able to get in there sooner rather than later.
This is the part where really I make a joke about not getting into alpha or beta for Shadowlands. I only got into the beta for BFA. Because someone went and asked, you know, who on the theory side could use beta access? I got it like that.
Yeah, my understanding is people, air quotes, are being a little more proactive with putting forth a list.
Well, I have,
you know, type of situation.
Friends and family alpha set up now, so I'm good.
There you go.
Because I've got friends at Blizzard now.
Oh man, does that mean you're going to get it before me?
Actually, probably.
Darn
so.
It!
But
I mean, second wave last time.
I have no idea. I don't know how it works. I've never been even in contention. I've always been like fingers crossed for beta. Fingers crossed for beta. Just fingers crossed for beta.
We'll see if your connections beat out my connection.
Yeah, we'll have to see. We'll have to see. But yeah. Anything else you want to touch on about Windwalker Season 4? Oh, actually, one more thing I want to mention about Season 4 and 9.2.5. The 9.2.5 patch release will not remove Cutting Edge and Ahead of the Curve as well. That's tied to Season 4. So we can get 9.2.5 like we got 9.1.5 and 9.0.5 and still, you know, get our Cutting Edge and everything after that. So I do actually wonder what they're going to do with Hall of Fame if the Alliance hasn't cleared it by the end of... Because they're not going to. For real.
By the end of the calendar year? I mean...
They're not going to... If we get 9.2.5, honestly, at any point in June.
Right.
Alliance Hall of Fame will not be full.
No way.
There are, as of like this Wednesday, there were 9 Alliance kills of the Jailer. And it will start filling up more quickly. Like the rate at which it fills will go up. But
there's 12 now.
There's 12 in the now. Whole world. Yeah. So what are they gonna do if we get 9.2.5? We get cross faction rating.
Right.
And how does that impact Hall of Fame?
Do you just, if you have 11 Alliance players and 9 Horde players, do you count as an Alliance guild to, you know, to get the kill? Like, that'll be very weird.
That's actually something we've got to figure out on the Warcraft Log side still. because right. you can't have a cross-faction guild, so for progression...
Right. How does that count?
It does go, the kill goes to the team, the guild that has the majority of players.
Right.
Like, you need a super majority. You need 11 players for a mythic kill. Like, yeah. You can't have it split 3 ways. Or it has to be 11 players. But there's this hypothetical situation of like a cross-faction guild of like 11 players are Horde on Helandrus and 11 players are Alliance on Anduin. And so it gets assigned to different guilds.
Right. How does that work? Like, because it just is like, I don't know. It's going to be a silly thing. And I don't like if there's an explosion of Horde guilds transferring Alliance, I don't think anybody's going to be upset.
Yeah.
You know, like I know there's even a cooldown before you're eligible, but at this point, guilds could sit through the cooldown and still make the Hall of Fame. Like,
yeah,
it is. It's going to be a really silly thing. And I think it continues to kind of highlight the problems, you know, with it. And
I mean, this is why we're getting cross-faction rating.
Right. Well, right. And it really is why if they want to keep with the Hall of Fame, it needs to be region based instead of, you know, if they're hard set on it, it needs to be region based or just worldwide.
Yeah. Just a single worldwide top 100 as well, I think.
Yeah. Because then you're done. I mean, looking at, let's see, worldwide top 100 would have been, if that was the trigger for Cross Realm Mythic, right?
It would have been like that week before last.
Month ago.
Oh, no, because it...
Was, or no, a week. It was the 10th. Yeah. 100 was the 10th.
Yeah.
So, Juk, I don't know. That's okay. It's a Chinese guild, so I'm pronouncing that incorrectly. But May 10th was when the 100th kill. I mean, there's 116 now. 12 of them are... I mean, even in that time between there being 100...
some of those top 100 are Alliance, right? Like, some of those top 100 are Alliance, because there's... Like, the top 3 to 5 Alliance guilds are very, very good guilds. Like, they're top EU or Oceanic or China guilds.
Yeah, so there's 4, 3. Yeah, so there was 8 in the top 100 for Alliance.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, and that's okay, right? Like, that's okay if they are going to be cross-realm or cross-faction. Like the base faction becomes less important.
Yep. And that's like, for our part, we're going to have probably, I mean, it depends on the interest level, right? But I expect we're going to have like an Alliance guild for our guild. That's just going to be like, here's where all of our Alliance alts go.
Yeah.
And so then when we do cross faction rating, we'll just pull in people from that guild.
We have Allied Excellence.
Well, we don't have it yet.
We don't have it yet. Okay.
We need to finish making that. Yes. Yes.
Nobody figure out what server we're on and steal that.
Yeah, it's not like it's very highly publicized or anything. Actually, fun fact, the guild website still says we're on Tyrellian.
Every once in a while I get like, what was the one that I fixed the other day? Somebody told me and I was like, oh, guess I missed that. I thought I fixed it. No,
it's on the recruitment page.
Oh.
Yeah, the recruitment page says we're on Tyrellian.
Oh, you're right.
All right, I noticed that because I had to send it to somebody.
That's what, yeah, because I tried. And there's just more places than I realized it had it listed. That's funny. All right, let me get that fixed. It's the positive improvements that we're getting to the game. Yeah. And, you know, it bodes well for the future, but after Mists, we had Warlords. After Legion, we had BFA. You know, so the future is never set.
After BFA, we had Shadowlands. So.
Right. So clearly the future is not set in stone.
Yes. I mean, we can make a list of the things that are like giving us hope for the future of WoW. And honestly, one of the ones that's near the top of my list is the fact that Ian like mentioned that there was a possibility of Master Luthor. Not because Master Luthor is like the end all be all or like this magic thing that's going to fix everything. It's more of like they were incredibly stubborn and like bullheaded about personal loot. And just the admission that maybe we could have Master Loot and that it would address some of the problems that we've run into is like, all right, maybe we can get there, guys.
Yeah, I think that right. If they can move past that or, you know, whatever, you know, maybe Master Looter becomes, you know, the way to go when you hit that supermajority. Whatever system, you know, any iteration on that shows that they're thinking and they're listening and that the people that are making the managerial decisions are listening to the people, you know, getting the feedback and giving the feedback, and that they're starting to understand that it's, you know, there, you can get more, you can hit those playtime metrics without focusing solely on playtime metrics.
Yes. Yeah. That's there's a truism, I don't know, adage, how do you say that? That I think is very relevant in any discussion of WoW's monetization model. Uh-huh. That when a metric becomes a goal, it ceases to become a good metric. Right?
Yeah.
When playtime becomes a metric that you optimize around, it's no longer a good metric for what it's supposed to measure.
Right.
Because people are stupid things with your game.
Right. And to make it, you know, to make that even more relevant to us specifically, that is why we've never monetized Peak. That is why Peak doesn't have ads. That is why, well, some of that is that I'm not smart enough to make it have ads.
Ads are a pain in the ass.
But yeah, no, right. Every time I'm like, maybe I'll just try. No, that's too hard. I give up. Yeah. But yeah, like the reason that we've never done that is because, you know, the metric for, you know, the success of the website has been people going on it, people looking on it. A big part of the metric for the website for me has been less questions in Discord.
Yeah.
If I'm not seeing the same question a dozen times every day in Discord, then the Discord facts, the, you know, the pins and the website are working, you know, but if people checking the website became my focus, or if making money off of the website became my focus,
right,
then that, you know, that would, the decisions we would make to do that
would be different,
would be very different.
Yep.
You know, and yeah, it would it be nice to be making more money off of all the work we do? Sure. But it's, you know, we all started doing it not for the money, so there's no reason to focus on, you know, the money. Like,
there's also the thing where I don't think there's enough money in it being like a monk website for it to be self-sustaining as like even a part-time gig because of just the huge gaps in changes. Like, what are you going to write about 6 months from now? I mean, you're going to write about new expansion stuff, but like in the middle of, you know, 915.
What would we be writing about right now?
Right.
Right. Like, we don't have any information. Everything would be speculative.
Yeah.
You know, and we're not a website like WoWhead.
Which, I mean, that, even WoWhead has to dip into the speculative sometimes. They just posted two, like, speculative, what do we think of Evoker articles that
you know,
were very content light.
Right. And WoWhead is broad enough in its, you know, scope that it can do stuff like that, and that's okay, and it makes sense.
Yeah,
you know, but you're right. I mean, for a class like Monk, you know, it just doesn't make any sense for us, and I think that's where the game, you know, to circle back to that, that's where the game had kind of gotten away, that the metric had become the goal, because, you know, the things were focused on making money, and to make money, people need to play. So let's do things that make people play.
Yep.
you know, and I'm hoping that, you know, they've gathered enough evidence at the corporate level to show that there are other ways to make money, you know, without jeopardizing the quality of, you know, your game.
I mean, I think Classic probably did the job for them, because Classic is not optimized for playtime.
Right.
And it is very popular and makes a lot of money.
Yeah.
So, if there was anything that was going to convince them, it would be the success of Classic, which Classic has been very successful. So, we got there.
Exactly.
But that, I think, is going to bring us to the end of our episode. So, I'm going to apologize again to the people who are listening to the audio version of this for the audio quality, because I know it's going to be worse. I'm going to do what I can, but I know it's going to be worse, and I apologize. It's no longer in advance, but at least now you know not to ping me on Discord and complain about it, because I already know I fucked up.
Right. We ping him because it's his birthday.
Oh my god. But that is going to bring us to the end of today's episode of the Peakers Friendly Podcast. If you enjoyed it and you want to support it and the other work that we do over on the Peakers Friendly, you can do that at our Patreon at patreon.com/Peakers Serenity. And of course, come and join the Discord. It is a great place to hang out and ask questions and learn more about the spec and the game and to complain about F1 rulings, because that is almost certainly what is going on at Brew Lounge right now.
Yeah, I'm not gonna get to that.
If if I had the ability to rename channels, it would be F1 Lounge, but that's all for the show today. Thank you for listening, and we will see you next week.